us and talk about the American families permanently separated from their loved ones because Democrat policies release violent criminals into our communities.
Those Democrat policies, and it seems that that's all the Democrats are interested in, is allowing legals to just roam through our neighborhoods and kill all of our beautiful white women. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 263. My name is Melvin. I want to thank you so much for being here. It's only been a couple of days, but Molly Tibbetts is already a household name. And how did this lovely young girl become a household name? Well, because it was incorrectly, peep this, incorrectly reported that the person that murdered her was an illegal. I can't even take this stuff seriously. So we're just going to go and ignore all the other murders, all the school shootings carried out by white guys, right? All of the murders carried out by neo-confederates, all that stuff is fine, because if you're here, you're white, if you were born here. Murder to your heart's content. But the minute you break one of our laws, and you're not supposed to be in this country, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I think it's pretty clearly racist. So, Miss Molly Tibbetts, murdered, 20 years old, college student. This becomes like the Natalie Holloway thing. So they say that illegals are murdering our beautiful white women all the time. They just can't help themselves. They just need to come here and get them some white meat. And what really happened, well, we're not going to know what really happened to Molly until after an investigation. But what was initially and incorrectly reported was that she was murdered by an illegal. Someone who just came here to kill him, a white girl. And what we've learned now, that he likely was not illegal. Oh, no. Not illegal. Bigger and better than that. Because these stories always tend to get bigger and better. She worked for an Iowa farmer. Hold on. It gets even better than that. She worked for an Iowa farmer who is also a prominent Republican donor. So I imagine Fox News is going to issue a correction. No? Is that silence I hear? All right, well, tell you what. The president will. President Donald J. Trump is going to issue a correction. No? Nothing? Huh. I wonder if when Sarah Huckabee Sanders hits the microphone tomorrow, if she herself is going to go ahead and issue a correction. Dagnabbit. Boy, it sure is quiet up in here.
We are in a position right now in America, more importantly, where this race thing is taking over, you know, because I believe our president is kind of trying to divide us. But I think
kinda?
Yeah. is not I don't want to say kinda. He's dividing us, and what I noticed over the last few months, that he's kind of used sport to kind of divide us, and that's something that I can't relate to.
What would you say to the president if he's sitting right here?
I would never sit across from him.
You would never? You don't want to talk to him?
No.
I'd sit across from him. I would absolutely talk to him. So whenever we hear from people who are not generally public speakers, and that includes sports figures, now they're in the public eye, but they're not generally public speakers. So here he goes, sort of, it sounds like he's hedging his bets a little bit. He's kind of dividing us with race. Whoa. And then he did the ultimate. He said that he would not sit apart from Trump himself. You understand? Donald Trump right now is not just the leader of the Republican Party. No. Oh no, he's so much more. He's also God himself. And so whenever somebody insults God, here come the right wingers. And nobody was louder on this particular issue than was one Laura Ingraham.
A lot of kids and some adults take these ignorant comments seriously. Look, there might be a cautionary lesson in LeBron for kids. This is what happens when you attempt to leave high school a year early to join the NBA. And it's always unwise to seek political advice from someone who gets paid $100 million a year to bounce a ball. Oh, and LeBron and Kevin, you're great players, but no one voted for you. Millions elected Trump to be their coach. So keep the political commentary to yourself, or as someone once said, shut up and dribble.
Millions more voted for Hillary Clinton, but of course that's obviously a whole nother subject. Now, conservatives only don't want to hear from sports stars and celebrities when they disagree with conservatives. Whenever these people are conservatives, like say, oh, I don't know, Ted Nugent or Kid Rock, they're completely okay with it. Not to mention Belichick. And who's that? I'm not a Patriots fan. Brady, right? These guys are big, fat Trumpers. They're cool with those guys. You know, you see Brady's got his MAGA hat inside of his locker, and they're cool with that because it's Trump. They're behind Trump. But if anybody dares speak against God himself. So what did LeBron James do that started getting him all this attention? Well, he decided to take those millions of dollars that he makes dribbling a ball around, and he decided to put it into a school. And he decided to put it into a school, you know, for underprivileged children. And so it comes up at this interview that he's doing with Craig Melvin. And he dared to say that he would not sit across from God himself. Oh, how dare he? LeBron James opened up the I Promise School. And when I was listening to Nicole Wallace the other day, she said, no. Do not shut up and dribble, please. If you're going to do good work like this, please continue doing good work.
The I Promise School is officially open in Akron thanks to the LeBron James Family Foundation. 240 third and fourth graders with plans to expand over the next 4 years. These are at-risk kids with free tuition, free uniforms, breakfast, lunch, snacks, plus career and emotional support for their parents. So no, LeBron James isn't sticking to dribbling, thank God. He's also not shutting up.
The thing that motivates conservatives today, and I don't care what anyone says, the thing that motivates them more than anything is race. Sacha Baron Cohen has been getting a lot of headlines recently. Love him or hate him, I'm somewhere in between. Well, I can't really say I hate the guy, but his brand of comedy at times makes me uncomfortable. And I'm good with maybe, you know, seeing it from time to time, but it's not something that I want to consume in large doses all the time. But he's got this new show now, I Am America, something along those lines. And so he goes into one of these southern towns, and he starts saying to this audience, you know, he's posing as somebody else. They don't know it's Sacha Baron Cohen. And he says that he's someone, and he's there though to tell them about a mosque that's going to be built in town. Now, most conservative media outlets have been hammering on the Muslim religion for almost the last 20 years now, and hammering on any of these countries that really the brown people come from. Sacha Baron Cohen is trying to get these people to say something, right? Because he knows what's in their hearts, and he knows what they're going to say. He knows it's super likely they're gonna point out how racist they are and how they don't want these dang gum Muslims around here. Like the dang gum brown folk. He knows they're gonna say it. He just has to get them on camera. And he gets them all to sign off on these releases. He gets them in a town hall. He talks to them and then he says, okay, hey, by the way, this mosque is going to be built here. How does that make you feel?
We don't want that here.
You bring a Muslim? We might have problems. We probably will have problems.
We'll all be moving out of this state.
Why would we want them safe inside when we don't even want them in our town?
Well, it would be to protect the worshippers from any violent
racists. It's not
racists. It's not us
that's causing the violence. It's them.
Oh, no. I didn't imply anybody here is racist. Of course not.
I am. I'm racist toward Muslims.
Let me continue, and then
that would probably look good in a fire.
Well, it would be made out of stone, so it won't be able to burn.
There's no Muslims.
There's no Muslims here.
Oh, there are no Muslims here at all.
This town's lucky to have black people in it.
Yeah, of course you're lucky to have black people. They add a lot to the society. Thank you, sir. Finally, somebody who appreciates multiculturalism. Sir, you are completely right. The benefit of having African Americans means a more diverse. Thank you, sir. Don't be ashamed.
He's saying there's black people in Kingman that aren't welcome there either, but we tolerate them.
I just want to say right up front, I am dead set against church burnings. I say this as a person who listens to black metal music, and there's a ton of church burning that happens within there. Living in the Southwest Washington, we've had a few church burnings around here. Nope. I myself am not a religious man, but I do not believe in the destruction of private property. Nor do I believe that you're really going to erase anybody's faith by destroying their church. And even if I did believe that going down the street and burning down, say, the Jehovah's Witnesses church is going to make them stop believing, I'm still not going to do it. I just don't think it's a great way to operate. And so here's this ignorant redneck Trump voter. That thing would look good on fire. What? Sir, it's going to be made of stone. It's not going to burn. I'm a racist. What? I'm racist against Muslims. This town is lucky to have black folk. So the show's getting a lot of attention for all the reasons that you would expect, because he's getting these Trump people to say a lot of unfiltered things. And it's amazing what a fair amount of conservatives are afraid of, what they're concerned about. And then it's even more amazing what they're not concerned about. Talked a lot on last week's show about the anti-American patriots. I'm trying to, that's the hashtag, anti-American patriots. You're an American, but you're also very anti-American. You're a neo-Confederate. See, one of the things that they should be concerned about is what's going on with Russia. And they're not, because there's fake news. Dang government's fake news. The Muslims try to build a church. It's fake news. So the headline here, this thing, Progress. Neo-Confederates officially began their latest Russian outreach operation. So what is this? Earlier this month, the white supremacist League of the South organization formally launched a series of Russian language pages, hoping to attract the support of Russian speakers across the world. The Ring Progress reported on the impending Russian language material in July, noting that the League of the South, head Michael Hill, has said that he believes that the Russian people and the Southern people are natural allies against the destructive and impersonal impulses against globalism. The announcement came as Think Progress was the first to report nearly 4 years after Hill's outreach in Russia, when he Skyped to a small Moscow-based conference organized by the anti-globalization movement in Russia, a group that would later receive funding from the Kremlin and help bring California, Texas, and Hawaii separatists to Moscow. So the League of the South is now working with the Russians, just like Trump is working with the Russians, working with the Kremlin. And the Kremlin, see this movement right now, to split California into several states is being, I mean, there's a fair amount of people that live in California that believe that it should happen. But even more so, the Russians really believe that it should happen. This idea that maybe we should secede, you know, this is also something that Russia loves. I mean, it's all of this is destabilization. And so this is the League of the South. This is one of these Trump groups, neo-Confederates. Isn't even bothering doing what Trump. I mean, they're just reaching right out. They're not just supporting Trump, who's supporting the Russian government, who's supporting the Kremlin. They're reaching directly out to the Russians and saying, we're here to help you. But we're doing it because this whole anti-globalist thing. So that's what they're doing. More or less in private. But what they're doing in public is saying that they need to hold on to power because Democrat policies are going to allow brown people to do this and brown people to do that. And even though Laura Ingraham may not see herself as a racist, which is amazing, she got a fair amount of attention for something that she said on the news. Fox News isn't going to cover the fact that these Southerners, these Trump people, are now working with Russia and that the Trump administration is explicitly working with Russia. They're not going to point that out. What they are going to point out is that there's too many dang-gum brown folk up in here. And America. Oh, God. We just don't recognize America anymore. These demographic changes are making us uncomfortable.
In some parts of the country, it does seem like the America that we know and love doesn't exist anymore. Massive demographic changes have been foisted upon the American people. And they're changes that none of us ever voted for and most of us don't like. From Virginia to California, we see stark examples of how radically, in some ways, the country has changed. Now, much of this is related to both illegal and in some cases, legal immigration that, of course, progressives love.
The headline, Confederate flag license plates are getting more popular in Tennessee. There are almost 3,300 active Sons of Confederate Veterans plates in Tennessee at the end of June, according to the Nashville Tennessean. While it's a small number overall, Tennessee has a population of around 6.7 million. And more than 5.6 million passenger plates in circulation. It represents a 72% increase over the end of fiscal year 2015. So some proceeds from the plate, which has the Confederate flag on the left side, benefit the Tennessee chapter of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, a Confederate pride nonprofit. The vanity plate has been issued since 2004 and comes with an annual fee. So every single one of these yahoos pays to have this on their car at a rate of $61.50 per year. The Sons of Confederate Veterans earned almost $58,000 from the plates in the fiscal year 2018. And they became super duper popular. 72% increase during what year? 2015, the year that Trump announced that he was running for president. And they were saying all these racial things. Now, when I hear this stuff, I go, yep, another day in America. Not surprised it's out there. I see it all the time. I don't know if there's really an increase. I believe that these folks have always been there, but they just feel emboldened to come out now as the hardcore racist they are and that they've always been. But when Laura Ingraham decided to go on TV and talk about demographic changes, we don't recognize America anymore. She was surprised. Honestly surprised about how much, not hate mail, love mail that she got. Mail with lots of loving, lovely words in it about how awesome she is. And she got all of this loving, lovely mail from none other than the white supremacist community.
I want to start tonight by addressing my commentary at the top of last night's show. A message to those who are distorting my views, including all white nationalists and especially one racist freak whose name I will not even mention.
Distortion!
You do not have my support, you don't represent my views, and you are antithetical to the beliefs I hold dear. The purpose of last night's angle was to point out that the rule of law, meaning secure borders, is something that used to bind our country together. And despite what some may be contending, I made explicitly clear that my commentary had nothing to do with race or ethnicity.
Actually, it kind of had everything to do with race and ethnicity. And don't tell me that you're all that concerned about the rule of law, because both Paul Manafort and Cohen were just one of them pleaded guilty, one of them was just convicted. They're both felons now. And what Cohen said implicates the president in not just one, but several different felonies. And you, Miss Ingraham, are not calling for him to step down as president. You're not calling for your party that controls the House to begin impeachment proceedings. And don't act like you were misinterpreted. Everyone can hear you. Everyone can hear you loud and clearly. This from the Des Moines Register. The headline, fired worker cites Trump to defend a racist remark. An Iowa woman fired for disparaging Mexicans at work cannot collect unemployment, despite her testimony that other employees also made derogatory comments about blacks and foreigners since Donald Trump's become president. Her name is Angela Dyers. She filed for unemployment after she lost her job at Dexter Laundry, a Fairfield manufacturer of commercial washers and dryers, for telling a coworker that she hates Mexicans. Iowa's Employment Appeals Board ruled that Dyer's statement clearly met the definition of misconduct and disqualified her from collecting unemployment benefits. The board reversed Administrative Law Judge Beth Sheets, who said Dyer's deserved unemployment benefits. Sheets had ruled that since Trump's election, it was common for workers at the plant to talk of hating African Americans and foreigners, and that the company could not single out Dyers for her misconduct. So it goes like this. She's fired, saying that she hates Mexicans. And she says it's cool because since Donald Trump became president, that's what we do. We all sit around and talk about how much we hate African Americans, Mexicans, and Muslims, and all the blah, 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 blah. And it's cool because the president did. I remember hearing about sexual assault taking place at my kid's elementary school. A young boy with an age in the single digits would walk up to a young girl, roughly about the same age, and grab her vagina in school. These are your kids. And then when he got busted for it, he'd go, hey, it's okay for the president to do. It's okay for me to do too. When people say it's all these illegals, it's clearly about race. And you really don't care about crime and punishment. You just care about making brown people look bad. And this thing where Laura Ingraham is now blaming the victim. My God, I didn't mean for white nationalists to reach out to me and love me. But here's the thing. Laura Ingraham does this all the time. I know. I listen to her show. And there was one call that she highlighted on her own show, which I thought was just amazing, where it talked up. This guy calls in. He goes, I know somebody that was killed by an illegal and it wasn't covered by the media. She asked for no specifics. She just takes his word as gospel.
My brother in April was killed by an illegal alien while he and his son and his girlfriend were out on a planned bike ride. His son was nine years old. And
oh, my God.
Doing 60 miles an hour on a side street and hit him on his bicycle. The district attorney has said that he, you know, confirmed that he is an illegal.
And was there a lot of news coverage? I didn't see any news coverage of this story, and I track all these stories.
No, not at all. Not at all.
No evidence. Cites nothing. Names nobody. Nothing, nothing, nothing. If anybody is murdered, see, I've worked in media, both radio and television. And when somebody's murdered, that makes the news. It may or may not make it right away, but it does make the news. The only thing we were discouraged from covering are suicides, unless they were real high-profile suicides. You know, like this handbag designer that killed herself recently. And Anthony Bourdain. Yeah, we can't get away from those. They everyone knows who they are. They're going to, you know, they died. People are going to ask. Avicii. People are going to ask. You can't really hide those. But otherwise, they ask us not to cover suicide. But murders, yes, those are covered. She has no specifics. She just took it as it was. Probably the lead person in the White House that is driving these racist policies right now is Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller doesn't do a lot of television appearances anymore. He does them, but not as many as he used to. But everybody knows who, and the guy's a white nationalist. And so his uncle recently wrote an op-ed saying, Stephen, what the hell are you doing? You yourself are a product of, air quotes, chain migration. The headline here, Stephen Miller is a product of chain migration, according to his uncle. Quoting here, Stephen Miller, the senior policy advisor to the president and one of the ideologues pushing the administration's hardline immigration policies, is the product of so-called chain immigration that he and Donald Trump often deride. That's according to his uncle, who penned an essay in Politico outlining Miller's
family immigration story recently. David Glosser, a retired neurophysiologist and Miller's uncle on his mother's side, detailed the story of how the family came to live in the United States. Miller's great-great-grandmother, Wolf Lieb Glosser, left the village of Antipol in what is now known as Belarus, amid violent anti-Jewish pogroms, and came to the U.S. and landed on Ellis Island in 1903, and over time was able to bring over the rest of his family. Through that generation and the next, the family built a chain of supermarkets and discount supermarket stores run by Miller's great-grandfather and great-grandmother. The family eventually became American citizens. It's that type of chain migration or family-based migration that immigrant hardliners, including Miller, say that they hate. Quote, I have watched with dismay and increasing horror as my nephew, who is an educated man and well aware of his heritage, has become the architect of immigration policies that repudiate the very foundation of our family's life in this country. The essay is in part a rejection of the immigration policies his nephew supports and at the same time a plea for him to reconsider. I shudder at the thought of what would have become of the Glossers had the same policies that Stephen so coolly espouses. The travel ban, the radical decrease in refugees, the separation of children from their parents, and even talk of limiting citizenship for legal immigrants had been in effect when Wolf Lieb made his desperate bid for freedom. The Glossers came to the U.S. just a few years before the fear and prejudice of the American first nativists of today closed the U.S. borders to Jewish refugees. So he's pointing out America first. This is a racist term from World War II. And these were the people in America that were saying that we should not fight the Nazis. Why? Because we've got plenty of things that we need to do here. America first. So one of the first slogans that this president really popularized during the election year was America first. And that was a dog whistle, an absolute dog whistle, the people who don't want any more brown people coming here. Had Wolf Lieb waited, his family would likely have been murdered by the Nazis along with all but seven of the 2,000 Jews who remained at Antipol. I would encourage Stephen to ask himself if the chanting, torch-bearing Nazis of Charlottesville, who support his boss seems to court so cavalierly, do not envision a similar fate for him. Miller, 32, is a fierce proponent of restricting both legal and illegal immigration to the United States. Trump recently tweeted that he was on a phone call with Mark Burnett, who is, of course, the producer of The Apprentice. And the thing that he tweeted out was that he just got off the phone with Mark Burnett, and Mark Burnett said that there are no tapes of him saying the N-word. Harumph! Wait a minute. There are no tapes of you saying the N-word? Or you did not say the N-word. Ah, there are no tapes of you saying the N-word. I feel fairly confident that there are tapes. Here's the way most of us are able to respond. I don't say the N-word. So therefore, there are no tapes of me saying the N-word. Most of us are able to say that. I myself am not able to say that because I, on this microphone for this show, I can't remember how many episodes it was. It must have been 100 episodes ago. But I've got a particular disdain for that word. I understand that the African-American community uses it and throws it around. It's in movies. It's in popular culture. It's in songs and all the rest. But I think that that word is just as oppressive today as it was when it was hurled at them during the days of slavery. Now, of course, African-Americans, a fair amount of them, still called each other that word, but I think that that word carries as much poison as it ever has. Melvin, is there a tape of you saying the N-word? Yes, there is, because I don't like hearing that word only because I believe that the poison that brought us that word is not dissipated. It's as much there as it ever has. But with Donald Trump, there's going to come a tape where he says, them damn N-bombs, them damn N's this and them damn N's that, and N-word, 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 N-word. And the White House knows those tapes are out there, and they know that they're coming. So this is a secret recording by none other than Omarosa, And this is the White House Communications Department talking about how they are going to handle it. Oh, this is beautiful. How they're going to handle it when that tape of him, Donald Trump, saying the N-word eventually comes out.
I'm trying to find out at least what context it was used in to help us maybe try to figure out a way to spin it.
I said, well, sir, can you think of any time that this might have happened? And he said, no.
Well, that's not
you
true.
Know, how do you,
so
he goes, how do you think I should handle it? And I told him exactly what you just said, Marissa, which is, well, it depends on what scenario you're talking about. And he said, well, why don't you just go ahead and put it to bed?
To Donald Trump, there are two types of African Americans, those who have worked for him, and of course the N-bombs. And he made this crystal clear on the day that, holy hell, Aretha Franklin died. What? Aretha Franklin died. And so here he comes, quoting here from the New York Post. I want to begin today by expressing my condolences to the family of a person I knew well. She worked for me on numerous occasions. What? She was terrific. Aretha Franklin, on her passing, Trump said during a cabinet meeting, she brought joy to millions of lives with her extraordinary legacy and so on and so forth. Now, wait a minute. She worked for you? Oh, yeah. You know, all the N-words work for me. Whoop. She worked for you. When the White House was reached for comment about when the hell Aretha Franklin worked for him, there was, of course, no response. So here comes the beautiful and lovely Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Is there a tape of the president saying the N-word? Have you ever heard him say the N-word? Sarah, please.
Can you stand at the podium and guarantee the American people they'll never hear Donald Trump utter the N-word on a recording in any context?
I can't guarantee anything, but I can tell you that the president addressed this question directly. I can tell you that I've never heard it.
I can't guarantee anything. Oh, no, you can't, Sarah. You goddamn right on that one. And it's not just Trump. It's also Fox News. That's helping to lead this racist charge into this race war. So the headline here from Yahoo, Fox News pays tribute to Aretha Franklin. Oh, that's nice. That's awful nice of them. Wow. Huh. Fox News pays tribute to Aretha Franklin with an image of Patti LaBelle. Oh, boy. Well, if it's Fox News, man, they all look the same. I mean, dang, how can you really tell one of them apart? Let them run. Let them try. Let them try to run from this as much as they want. Try to pretend this isn't about race. It's just about protecting America. Chain migration. Oh, my goodness gracious. We see through it. We see what it really is. And even somebody as high profile, everybody knows who Aretha Franklin is. And y'all got it wrong. Y'all got it dead wrong. But I suppose this is America. This is just what it is. Can't do much about it. Oh no, that's wrong. We can do something about it. And we gonna. Now, I usually come out of these songs, which I use as a bit of a palate cleanser for the next segment. I usually come right out of them with an audio clip, but I'm not doing that this time because I just want to say this to you. Likely the entire second half of this show is going to be dedicated to the Pennsylvania grand jury report. And in that report is a lot of horrible, disgusting details. about what happened to children. So for those of you that cannot handle it, those of you that do not want to hear it, those of you that might be triggered, those of you that maybe even a shower afterwards isn't going to be able to wash the funk of these stories off of you, go ahead and switch it off right now. Just turn off the podcast and just catch me next week. But for those of you that have decided to stick around, this is the gritty reality of what we're dealing with now.
Church officials routinely and purposefully described the abuse as horseplay and wrestling and inappropriate contact. It was none of those things. It was child sexual abuse, including rape, committed by grown men, priests, against children.
Can you think of anybody more trusted in our society than priests? I don't think any of us can. Full disclosure, I grew up ever so briefly. Couldn't have been more than a few months. And I say that, there were lots of places I only lived for a few months. One of them was Bedford County, Pennsylvania. One of them was Johnstown, Pennsylvania. My mom's boyfriend was from there. She met him in the Navy in San Diego. And after they spent enough time together, we ended up moving to Pennsylvania with him. Did it by bus. 4.5 days on the bus. 24-hour-a-day ride. Just amazing. And we get to Johnstown, and we right away move in with Greg's family. I won't give you last names here. We move in with Greg's family. And because his family is Catholic, and his mother and father are crazy old, he himself is in his 20s at this point, he still has sisters, some of them very little. There's 3 or 4 sisters living at the house at the time. And I remember learning that they're all Catholic, and they're attending Catholic school. And I found that intriguing. A school just for Catholics? Well, that's crazy. Never heard of that. And I remember talking with the dad. His name was Larry. And I said, Larry, wow, I'm so curious about the school. Are you Catholic? He says, no, I'm not. He goes, well, it's not for you then, obviously, unless you convert. Convert, huh? Wow. Education, theological education. He goes, well, they learn all the stuff, regular stuff people do, but they, you know, they do it where it's based around the canon laws, God's laws, not man's laws. Wow, I was intrigued. I'm not ready to join, but I'm definitely intrigued. And then I remember hearing, and this is back during the late 80s, and I remember hearing, and I go, oh, did you just sign up for this? And he goes, no, you got to pay. And you got to pay out of pocket for it. He had 4 daughters at that time, 4 daughters in school, at least 3. We'll go with 3. It was 3 or 4. I can't remember. But we'll go with 3. I feel like that's a safer number. And he says it costs $1,000 per kid per year. $3,000 a year. Wow. In 1980s wages. That's crazy. I think the minimum wage was probably $3-4 an hour at that time. It wasn't much. And I go, wow, and you pay $3,000. It's that important to you. Yeah. The entire city, Johnstown, Pennsylvania, the whole effing town was just Catholic to the bone. And that's fine. I didn't understand a lot about it at the time. But looking back, it seems strange to me now to indoctrinate your children, even with their schooling, in only this one way of thinking. So when this grand jury report came out from Pennsylvania, and it talked about 70 years, so this goes all the way back to the 1940s. And the only reason it only goes back to the 1940s is because that's how old some of the oldest living victims are. I'm sure if you went even further back than that, you'd, because this is clearly a part of the church. It's something everyone knows about. It's something that they've covered up. And they found thousands of cases of child abuse, child sexual abuse, carried out by hundreds of priests. And it wasn't an unknown thing. It was absolutely known. And here's the other thing. This was one state in a country with 50 states out of one country in a world with hundreds of countries. So if you take the multiplier effect of what happened to these thousands of children in this one state, and the Pennsylvania grand jury report says, yeah, these are the ones we found, but we're pretty sure there's many, many more that we did not find. So what happened in that church? Reading here from CBS News, a couple of fun stories. Abusing five sisters from one family, Father Gus Giella of the Diocese of Harrisburg allegedly abused five of the eight sisters from a single family, including one who was 18 months old at the time. I mean it. If you can't hear this, turn it off now. It gets worse. Giella regularly collected samples of the girls' urine, pubic hair, and menstrual blood, according to the report. He allegedly used a device to collect some of the samples from a toilet. The diocese refused to remove Giella after the collections were found in his house, though he later admitted the crimes, according to the report. He was arrested in 92 and died while he was awaiting trial. A ring of violent rape. A ring of predatory priests in the Diocese of Pittsburgh. George Zerwas, Francis Pucci, and Robert Wolk, and Richard Zula shared intelligence about their victims and were exchanging victims among themselves, the report says. These priests allegedly produced child pornography on diocesan property, including parishes, rectories, and used whips, violence, and sadism while raping their victims. It goes on. A naked boy is Christ. Zerwas befriended a boy named George in the mid-1970s, taking him on trips and even teaching him how to drive. George said his family encouraged the friendship, believing Zerwas was very trustworthy and a good influence. Zerwas brought George to the Paris Rectory in Munhall, where he met Pucci, Zula, and another priest, Francis Luddy. According to the report, the priest asked George to get up on a bed and remove his shirt. They drew an image resembling Jesus Christ on the cross and told George to take off his pants so he would look like Christ in a loincloth. The priests started taking Polaroid pictures of the boy and asked him to remove his underwear. George, who was under 18 at the time, recalled the priest giggled and said the pictures would be used as reference for new religious statues at their parishes. They added the pictures to a collection of similar photographs depicting other teen boys. We're ramping up here. Crucifix, sodomy. Father George Flohr, the Diocese of Greensburg, allegedly started abusing a boy in 1967 or 1968, when the boy was around 10 or 11. It allegedly started when Flohr touched the victim's genitals while saying that God loves all his children. Flohr later instructed the boy on how to touch his genitals and performed oral sex on the boy, this according to the report. In the final act of abuse in 1969, Flohr allegedly took the victim into a confessional and tied him up in a praying position and silenced the victim by putting his penis into the boy's mouth when he was 11. He then sodomized the boy with a crucifix and called him a bad boy and let him go. The victim later set fire to a church carpet. The diocese reimbursed him $51,163 in therapy and medical treatment, calling it an act of Christian charity in your dire need, according to the report. Flohr, of course, died in 2004. Another story. God did not want children wearing clothes. Father Edmund Perikow, who served at Mount Pleasant, admitted in 1985 that he molested about 35 boys over a 17-year period, which included mutual fellatio, mutual anal intercourse, that's according to the report. One victim later said that Perikow told altar boys not to wear any clothes under their cassocks because God did not want any man-made clothes to be worn next to their skin while they were serving Mass. The victim also said Perikow took the altar boys into a private room and said that he had to do a physical examination on them. Four victims said that they were abused by Edward R. Graft of the Allentown Diocese. One, called Joey, said Graft raped him so violently that it damaged his back. That injury, which put him on painkillers, turned him into an addict and eventually killed him. The report details many instances of priests remaining on the job even after confessing to the child sex abuse, but one eventually ended up working at Disney World with the diocese blessing. He used the church as a reference. The church that was well aware of the fact that he was abusing boys, he used that church as a reference so that he could get himself a job at Disney. Yeah, that Disney.
The stories of abuse by men who are given the highest level of trust are grotesque. Those entrusted to minister to their communities used gold crosses, necklaces, symbols of their faith to mark their victims, making them easier to target. A child was stripped naked and forced to stand on a bed and pose as Christ on the cross. One priest confessed to raping at least 15 boys, some as young as 7 years old. Another abused five sisters from the same family.
And please pay attention. The numbers we are about to go through are both stunning and disturbing. More than 1,000 children were abused in twisted and sadistic cases of exploitation, some of which included alcohol, whips, and holy water. And the state AG says he believes, his office believes, there are even more.
The headline here by Charles Topher: New York bishop rape shames abuse victims. Says that boys are culpable for their own actions at 7 years old. I want to say something about that particular age. When I was baptized into the Mormon Church, which is the most recent religion that I was a part of, they said that at 8 years old, or when you get baptized into the church, that's when it sort of starts the whole sin clock over again. So everything you did before you were 8 years old, it's all washed away once you turn eight. Then you're culpable for your own actions. Aha. The other way to become clean and be able to start with a fresh slate again was to get baptized by the church. But I remember hearing that eight-year-old thing. And I go, I don't really know that we're ready to make our own decisions at that age. But the church says that we are. Quoting here, Bishop Robert Cunningham of the Diocese of Syracuse, New York, doesn't think priests should take all of the blame for the decades, if not centuries, of sexual abuse against young boys. According to Cunningham, the age of reason in the Catholic Church is seven. So those boys are culpable for their actions. The shocking statement came during testimony that was recently released from a deposition from a federal lawsuit. Charles Bailey, a survivor of the priest's abuse, asked then-Bishop James Moynihan whether the church held children victims partly responsible for the sexual abuses for priests. Moynihan said, right to his face, the age of reason is seven. So if you're at least seven, you're culpable for your actions. Bailey, the victim, was obviously floored by this response.
I grew up in a small western Pennsylvania town, Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
I grew up in Bethlehem.
Anhot, which is like right behind Steele High High School, Steelton area.
I was groomed starting young.
The day I met him, I was around 18 months old.
They targeted me because I was fatherless.
We were taught, the priests and the nuns are God.
Just think, like, the word God makes me think of him, and I just...
Who would have believed me? A priest in 1948 or 47 would abuse you? Would do that? Never heard of such a thing because they covered it up.
It doesn't ever go away. It has an effect on you for the rest of your life.
And I'm a survivor.
It's very lonely. Especially when it's your word against God's.
Your word against God's. I wrote about this. I myself am a longtime victim from when I was a young man before I even got to grammar school age, elementary school age. I myself, and I'm not going to go into details, but I myself was victimized for a long, long time. Not by a priest himself, but by a religious individual who believed that this was okay. And yes, God is watching, but this is okay. Because if it was not okay with God, then why isn't he stopping me? When I was in the band Two Word Culture, I wrote a song called In a Rectory Bedroom after just hearing a couple of the stories. And for the guys in the band who were not victims of sexual abuse themselves, or they were never willing to admit it to me, of all the songs that we did, and I wrote this nice, catchy, choppy punk rock, rah, 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 you know, something that would have worked with gang vocals and all the rest, just punked it out. But the guys in the band, it was always their least favorite song to play because of how horribly uncomfortable it is for me to say those words on stage in a deeply conservative Catholic, redneck Trump town. And that's, I mean, Bush was president at the time, but I remember hammering on the, and it was pretty clear, even with the dirty punk rock vocals, it was pretty clear what I was singing about. And everyone in the band, that was their least favorite song to play, but it was therapy for me, you know, as a victim, you know, hearing about these kids, you know, being re-victimized again. It's very therapeutic for me. And hearing it now, the song is only 2.5 minutes long or 3 minutes long, but hearing these stories now, I don't know, I could make that song an hour long and it's still not going to cover how infuriated I am by this. And the church right now doesn't seem to care. It's man's law versus canon law. And they believe that man's law doesn't matter. Only the church. The church is separate from man. And what they handle it themselves, they keep it quiet. They'll be judged before their own God. This idea of infallibility, we need to shed it. We need to get rid of it. There really is no such thing. There is nobody. And I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what your politics, religious affiliation, gender, nationality. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is infallible. This is going to piss off the Trumpers, but not even Trump. Trump's not perfect. Nobody is absolutely perfect. Now, we don't all got big-ass skeletons in our closet like these priests do. I say big ass, that would suggest an adult. Of course, the skeletons for the priests would be children. But this idea that there are infallible men on this planet, men that can do no wrong, men that are worthy of every bit of our trust, and we are not allowed to question, that idea needs to go away. I'm not a religious man, so I don't follow canon law. I follow man's law. And on this planet, in this life, we believe that the rape of children, I'm going to say something radical here, we believe that the rape of children is wrong.
They don't follow the law. They rape children. It's against the law to rape children. They don't care about our laws. They care about canon laws. And they control our laws. They don't follow our laws. They don't care about our laws. And they control our laws.
That last part that he says right there, that they don't care about our laws, but they control our laws. Yeah, that's pretty much the way it is. And if you're going to be here, now, in this time, you're going to operate inside this country and on this planet, you're going to have to follow our laws. And they say, no, these children are ours to do with what we want with. And I suppose that we're powerless, and it's all just God's plan.
We talked about the war, the ongoing war in Yemen the other week after that bomb was dropped on a school bus and killed a number of school children. It was a bomb dropped by Saudi Arabia. At the time, the Pentagon said they were not aware of whether or not it was an American-made bomb. We do know now that it was a bomb made by U.S.-based Lockheed Martin and sold to Saudi Arabia. 40 kids were killed in that attack. The UN is calling for an investigation.
I hear so much about it from conservatives when they say that we need to get rid of abortion because we need to protect the children, the babies, the children, God protect the children, the babies. And I hear so much about it when it comes to school shootings. We need to protect our children, protect the children, children, protect the children. By putting more guns in schools and maybe teachers can murder students, protect the children. I hear so much about it. We need to protect the children from the pedophiles, but not the priests. No, not the priests, just, you know, those other generic pedophiles. You got Donald Trump that endorsed a pedophile in the Alabama race. Starting to not believe the protection of children rhetoric that's coming from conservatives. And then this happens out of Yemen. A school bus was hit by a missile. We make one thing in America. We make death and destruction. We make bombs, we make guns, we make tanks, we make planes, all of it. Whatever ends human life, that's what we produce in America. In this school bus, this kind of stuff happens all the time, by the way. But this was particularly bad because the pieces of the bomb were all over the place and it was stamped with Lockheed Martin stuff all over it. Lockheed Martin, an American company. War profiteers. And this bus, think about if this, a bomb hit a bus and killed 40 children on the bus in America. Few things you have to know about this. Yes, it happened. Yes, it was an American company. And yes, these weapons were sold by the Obama administration. See, the bomb came from Saudi Arabia. And we sold them $115 billion in bombs. Okay? And we decided to cut them off. Because we were fairly certain that they were going to do something like this. And of course they have. You know, so we sold them these weapons. This particular weapon was sold during that time. But the Obama administration pulled back and quit selling to them. But as soon as Donald Trump became president, the sale was on again. Nobody's hands are clean here. No country, no president, only the children. The children who were murdered when their bus was bombed. And you got to ask yourself, all we do is make death and destruction. Is this what we want people to think of when they think of America? Not American actors or singers or activists, spiritual leaders. Is this what we want people to think of when they think of America? The fact that a bus was bombed. And 40 children were just turned to soup because Lockheed Martin, they needed to make money. So they lobbied our government. And we sold weapons to the Saudis, the same Saudis that took down the towers. And now they bombed the school bus. If this happened in America, this would be all day, every day, crying mothers on television. But this happened in Yemen. And these children don't matter. Well, not as much as Molly Tibbetts matters. Even though what we've learned about Molly Tibbetts, see how I'm bringing it full circle here? Even though what we learned about Molly Tibbetts is that her killer was not an illegal immigrant. Even though we've learned that now, Molly Tibbetts is going to become a household name and the face of American anti-immigration for the foreseeable future. Fox isn't going to be hammering on the fact that we sold these weapons to the Saudis and they murdered 40 children. It's going to be on this little brown fella, worked in Iowa for a Republican donor, a prominent Republican donor on this prominent Republican donor's farm, and then murdered this white girl because he's an illegal. That's the story you're going to hear about. Tibbetts' name is going to become household. These children on this bus will never, ever have a name. We have to think about what we want our legacy to be. Because whether you like it or not, whether you're voting or not, these killings are happening in your name. Congressional elections, 2 short months away. Get out there, kids. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tficpo.podbean.com. Like us at facebook.com/tficpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android. Users' individual episodes are available for download. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out on Podbean or, you know, on iTunes, whatever. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. Feel free to reach out to us. It is always thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. Thank you for listening. By the way, this is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.